Why don't you start over at the point where you were telling the names of the attorneys for whom you were interpreting?
Oh, yeah. I used to interpret for Mr. Eugene Tincher, very fine man. I knew his wife, and also for Eugene Fisher, and also for Nancy Ferris. And then I especially needed their services when we had trouble on Signal Hill when we first came in 1921. It was flourishing as a beautiful agricultural field. Flower forests had flowers all on the south and the west side, and the vegetable growers on the other side. It was just as colorful as could be. And then eventually, as oil was discovered, in those days they didn't keep a log as they do now, they would hit a air pocket, cause a gusher, then the oil would just shoot up like water, and it ruined all the flower beds and everything. Well, the Japanese farmers had signed leases on the place, but it's just like when they discovered oil and gold, there's an oil rush instead of a gold rush, and people, big companies, were anxious to get the best farm first. So regardless of who owned the land, who had the lease, they brought their heavy equipment up overnight, and they just ruined everything, trampled down everything. And these men would come to our office, the association office, early in the morning and tell me what happened. What can you do about it? I said, well, I know that we would have to get together with the oil company, and we would probably have to go to court. But I said, our lawsuit costs a lot of money. I said, it takes a long time. And I said that your livelihood is, taken away from you, and you need assistance next tomorrow. You can't wait months or weeks. I said, you have to have something done right away. And I think maybe the best thing is to have set up this out of court. Go directly to the company, and that's what you should do. I said, well, how do you go about it? And my high school law courses came in handy, my commercial law training. I said, well, you tell me how much it costs to put the seeds in, to get the ground ready for cultivation and planting, and how much you've spent so far. Well, it's $1.50 an hour for water, so much for Mexican labor, so much for seed. I said, that's the kind of information I want, so you just give it to me, and if you can't remember, look up your receipts and bring the receipts. And I bring the receipts to these compiled lists and take it to the oil company. And I said, how much do you think you would make at harvest time if you are allowed to stay there till the time came to harvest? How much do you think you would have made? And then we'll estimate how much you have lost altogether. So that's what I did. And I would type to 12 o'clock at night, making up these statements for them. And I'd tell them, if you come at a certain time, and you come at a certain time, if I'm at home, wait in the backyard. I would have my neighbor girl and her mother take care of my little children while I would ride them in their old truck up to the oil company. And that's what I did, made a deal with the oil company. And I would say, these men have no place, other place to go except go to Torrance or some other farm and live with their friends. I said, they have no money saved up. They've even borrowed money to put their crops in. I said, they can't wait long. I wish that you would make a settlement as soon as you can. We'd appreciate it. I went about it in a friendly way because I think that's the right approach. They would sympathize with us more. And we did receive a lot of money from each one of them. And of course, they didn't get what they asked for. But the men said, well, this is better than mine. We just have to take what you can, I guess, in this circumstance. You have no money to fight them. And I said, you know, this corporation, now it's this big company, now it's very powerful. No lawyer that we could hire could ever win a case against them. So I said, this is the best way. We'll do what we can. I think we settled some 90 cases, because the damage spread from air signal here down to almost 101 highways, 101, and also on the north side and this side. And it was an awful lot. I can't remember how much we got out of it, but I helped these people. And
what kind of things did you go to the attorneys for? What kind of things did you go to the attorneys for?
Well, to ask them how much that they would think was a reasonable amount to ask for these harvests, and how we should present these papers. And Judge Stephen, he was a crippled man, and he helped me a lot. And I think it's more of the other cases that I went to Mrs. Ferris for. But like Eugene Tincture and Eugene Fisher, I went to ask them about their houses. You know, could we get anything for housing? Because they would have to, well, they didn't have to, but I think that out of common decency, they would have to do something to their friends. You know, they had to make room for their families, push them into the barns or whatever to make room for them, because there were no place else to go to. And so I had to go for consultations of that sort. And they said that they would leave the child up to the families. They said that that was reasonable, that we could ask and explained that to the oil companies too, that they had no houses to rent other than these farm friends who would take them in. Then they weren't sure which families would take them in, because they had families of their own. It was a long time ago, so I don't remember too much of the discussions we had, but there were problems plenty of them.
Under what circumstances did you translate
for
the city court?
Well, in those days, there was, when you think of it now, it's funny. This one man threw a stone to scare the seagulls away. In the wintertime, no one goes to the beach, so the seagulls would come inland. And when he would plant his crops, he would go down 101 Highway and stand right down here by one apparel. And he had a farm. And he planted seeds, and the seagulls came and dug them all up, because they wanted to eat the seeds. And he threw a stone to scare them, but he accidentally hit one and killed one. And somebody passing by reported him to the city, and the protected by law said that he was throwing stones at seagulls. And so he called and said, the officers came and they're going to take me to jail. So what should I do? I said, what did you do? So then he told me. I could hardly understand him, because he had only a few upper teeth and a few lower teeth, and he was hissing all the time. And I said, what did you call? Did you just tell me? He said, I just killed them, but I had to scare them. They're eating up all my seeds. So that was scarecrows out there, but they're not afraid of scarecrows. And he says he and his wife can't be out there waving something all day. And so he said it's an accident. So that's it. So I explained it to the judge. And he said, it's understandable. He said, case dismissed. So that case is settled. And another case, a farmer, I can't remember where it was. He said that a band of gypsies came one evening, and he said, can we park here on your property and use your water to water the horse? And could we pitch our tents here and park our wagons? So so he sat there, and yeah, one night, all right, okay. And so he said he took out different things for them to eat and took out hot water for them to wash up. And he said, here's hay in the barn to feed your horses, and tried to help them. But he said this one night, the last day and week. He said, after 1 month, he said, they used up more hay than my own horses would eat. He said, I couldn't afford it. And he asked them to leave. And he got, you know, real belligerent. And he said that he was getting afraid. He asked to loan them money. He said, I couldn't loan them money. So then he said that he told them to get off, and they got mad at him. So then he reported to the police. And the police set a date for the hearing. At that time, I didn't know they had a city hall in Signal Hill. And I thought it was in the courtroom, I think it was Department 10 or something, downtown. So I took my children on the bus, and I went down there, and I waited, and I waited. All the cases were scheduled for the day were taken care of, and I was still sitting there. And the judge asked me what I was doing. I said, you have a case coming up here today, but it's way past the time that was scheduled. I said, I don't know what happened. And in the meantime, we got a telephone call. I said, is there a woman by the name of Susanna there? She's supposed to be in the Signal Hill court. And I was never embarrassed. The police car came after me, took me and the two children, and had the siren on, went all the way down the pike and up Pine Avenue. And everybody's looking at me, and I just said, what is that woman with the children doing? And they brought me up to the Signal Hill court. And Mr. Yamamoto told me what had happened. And his wife was crying. And he said, I'm afraid to go out in the field to work now. The children, the people are spreading all over the field, and husbands are threatening us. She says, we can't even go out and harvest our crop. And he said, it's getting awful. So I told the whole story to the judge. And he said, absolutely not. People have to leave, and he told it to the leader, whoever the band leader was, told it off right away. And he said, by rights, I should find you, but knowing that you're gypsy, I'll excuse you this time, but leave right away. And if you don't, I have to have police officers remove you. And it's, you know, little cases like that. But with Miss Ferris, there was a couple downtown who ran a boarding house. They had a Japanese man for a cook, and the cook was in the kitchen. And some old lady who lived upstairs was coming down the stairs to get a drink of water in the kitchen. And the couple were discussing something they didn't want anybody to hear. And they thought that the Japanese cook didn't understand, so they didn't mind him. But the woman came down in her dressing gown to get water, and the lady said, what are you doing? How long were you listening to what we were saying? I don't know, she said. I just came down the stairs to get a drink of water. But they beat her up. They beat her up something awfully. And then this man, the cook, got scared, and that night he just packed up and left. And they thought that he was hiding up in Los Angeles in some Japanese boarding house up there, but he would be the only witness. And this old lady, she wanted someone to be a witness. And another lady came with her, and they asked me to do the interpreting, and said, even if he doesn't want to appear as a witness in court in this case, why, he could give a deposition, and we would use it. And we scanned every boarding house. We couldn't find anybody. And so that's what I did for Miss Ferris. All of this Ohio agency that you, in those days, they had publishing. Not the professor Shaw or Drink Liquor, but they had a fine drink they call sake. It's made from rice that they cook and that they ferment to a certain stage, and they skim it off, and I don't know if they distill it or just what they do, but they drink this sake. And they saw the men making that down in this Ohio rooming house. They had about 5 men who had involved in making the sake in jail. And I had to go and interpret for them. They just had to plead guilty or not guilty that they were making. And they had to prove that they were just making it for their own use. And they said, how much did you sell? We never sold any. We just drank it among ourselves. And so when the judge believed them, I think that case was dismissed. But I think men were embellished. It's the first time I went up in the elevator up to the top floor to the place. You know, so the men were in jail. Mm-hmm. And I asked them, I'm supposed to interpret such things. And I said, I heard that you men were making such, is that right? And they said, yes, but what have they got you in that for? I said, I'm trying to interpret. I'm not taking anybody's side. And I'm going to tell the city anything about sake. We didn't sell it, you know. I said, well, I'm just going to interpret what you say and what the city wants me to ask you. So that's all. I'm not going to make up anything or say anything that I don't need to say. I think it's not as laughable, but things like that. And then someone who would park on the wrong side of the street. That's another one. In those days, they had what we call a public market. It was taken after the German entered in Linden. They parked all around Linden Park downtown. And ranchers and farmers from all around here brought their produce in to sell. They just sold from 7 in the morning to 12. They had a market master who charged them $1, I think, for space. And it was a very picturesque thing. And people go down there on the bus with their shopping bags, and they got nice fresh vegetables, eggs, and everything. And the men would park their trucks there whenever they could find space. But a lot of times they were blocking traffic, blocking someone's private driveway, and they would get a ticket, and I would have to go in for that. That's the kind of interpretation I had to do for this. And another man, a farmer, took his plow and dug up the, not the center, but the paved part, where all the dirt rows, but the center part. He dug that up, and someone had a report that said that he was trying to plant on city property. So then it said, what were you trying to plant on city property? And the man was so frank, he was waving his hands all the time. No, I wasn't going to plant there. The weeds were that high, and I was just plowing them under, but I wasn't going to plant anything. He said, those weeds would mature, and the streets would blow onto my field, and I'd have a lot of weeds, so I had to chop them down while they're still young. He said, I would be plowing the weeds under. I was going to use it. another one was some man. I don't know how it happened, but, oh yes, a Japanese man used a strip. It was between two properties the oil companies had these, and it was just a 30-foot strip. And one man had his farm next to it, and it was being used, I think, during the summer months as a load. It has to be proven that, as by law, it's not used or cultivated or done something to it. It's sacrificed to the state as public domain. And so they had to prove that somebody has used it, or every few months it was being dug under. And this farmer, once in a while, if he had all the extra things he wanted to plant that were like melons or things that had vines, and he would plant it on the property 30 foot wide. And they had to find a man who could prove that it was being used, that it wasn't always used as a road. That was another case. And this man said, yes, when I had things like apples and melons, I had to use that because it took too much space in my vector, 5 acres. So those are some of the simple cases. There weren't any criminal cases, of course.
Except maybe the sausage. Pardon? Except maybe the sausage. Then it still sounds too dangerous. it just occurred to me. When you were in Arkansas, is that the first time you'd ever seen snow?
Yes, up at the mountains. And yes, I could see the Pasadena as Sherman. But I had a Girl Scout and I never had gone to the mountains to see snow. And I remember seeing my grandfather. I went to California, and people who had moved out to California from the east, all the driving through the snow and going sledding and bobsledding, tobogganing, it was so much fun. But, oh, I wish we'd have snow. But when I went to Arkansas, I went back. One day in February, I remember I got up early. And we all get up and go to the mess hall, the central building where they served our meals. And we went there, and when I got up and went to the mess hall, I was in Block 8, and Block 7 was here, and the next was the forest. It was a big tract of land, tall trees, and so dense you couldn't see the other side of them. It just looked like the postcard you see. The limbs were just hanging, draping because of the way it smelled. It's a beautiful sight. But then when it started to fall, it got so messy and soft snow and the mud mixed together. And there was a thing that in Arkansas that if you stick by Arkansas, she'll stick to you. I remember my husband couldn't do much work, but he got a piece of metal, and his job all day was to scrape the mud off of the children's shoes, and then after he got all the mud off, he'd have a bucket filled with water, and he'd wash that mud off and hang it on a clothesline to dry. Oh, that was so sticky to his clothes.
Okay.
If there's any question that we ask, I'd like to ask.
When the Wrigley District was first developed, in the 20s, I guess, did Japanese people live in there?
Oh, no. Nobody could live there.
I mean, when it was first cut, you know, drained and divided up into lots of things.
No, no. We couldn't buy there. And the only people who lived were anywhere near there, they were just leasing land or renting. I know there was one family named Supper, the son, who's 60 years old now. The mother is, I just saw him at a funeral the other day, and I was talking to him. He said his mother was 87. Bedroom most of the time, he's taking care of her. But they lived in a house on Magnolia, about 20, in the 20 block on Magnolia. And we went to visit them one time. My goodness, it was an old, old house that was built here back 1900s, early or late 1800s. And they had a few old trees, even the trees looked old. And they were complaining of too many skunks. When I see Magnolia Street now, I can't believe it was the same place.
Yeah. Could you describe what it looked like to go from Long Beach to Pasadena?
Yes. Of course, we didn't have the freeways, but we always took one road straight up Cherry. And I have to tell you this funny story. We had an old Chevrolet, and it didn't have the power to go up Cherry like an ordinary car. We would go up to the first platform. I think that's where the Southern California Military Academy is now. We would go up there. Then my husband turned the car around and run up reverse. Then we'd turn around and go back down. And then took the road out to Downey. And every time we see that row of palm trees out there, beyond the, what is it, Carson and Cherry, I think of the road we used to follow those palm trees out. I'd never be able to find it now because the landmarks are gone. But we went the long way.
And what was between Long Beach and Pasadena?
There's nothing but dairy farms. A lot of people had cows and lots of pastures. That's what it was, the dairy farms. The winter time it was so muddy out that way.
You didn't pass through any other little towns? Or?
Downey, that's the only one I can remember. Because that was in the 20s. So after 1930, things were developing gradually. I said before that Long Beach was just built up to 6th Street. There was a building on the corner. That corner, it was called the famous department store. It was called the Army and Navy store. That's the only building there. Then all the rest of the way, it was dirt road and ditches, and one highway had ditches on both sides and had oil running down. And then there was a little a wooden post like this. It said American Avenue on one side, East State Street.
It just occurred to me that you probably visited your parents in Pasadena over the years.
Yes.
And I just wondered how you saw the road in between change.
Oh, yes, it changed. But there were orange groves from Downey on through to San Gabriel. And I don't remember much, too much, because I was busy tending to the children. My husband was one that would say, well, I'm going to Pasadena. If you want to go, get in the car. Well, I couldn't get up and go, you know. So I knew his nature, so I always had a set of clean clothes ready, and I'd take a bucket half full of warm water and a few towels, and I'd throw those in the back seat. I'd sit in the back seat with the chair. First I'd put a big bucket of water in the chicken coop with the chickens. Lock the door, and had a small refrigerator that had 30-pound block of ice. I had to change that pan on the water. I'd empty that, lock the door, turn off the gas, put the water off of the chickens, and I'd have them. And it took me all the time from here to Pasadena to wash each child's face, call me searching his clothes. My mother asked, how can you keep your children up so nice way out there in the country, not just in Long Beach? She never knew what I went through all that time. Just before we passed, I'd tell my husband to open the door, and I'd throw the water out. So that's what I did most of the time. I'd have a chance of watching.